used a microphone before, but I've been told it's my destiny. As many of you know, this is my first year in program, and the convention last year was my first convention, and I wanted to get involved, and I loved all the speakers last year, so I thought that would be a fun thing to do. And I really didn't know many people, but I had a lot of help, and through prayer and fellowship in OA and just asking around and kind of interviewing people on the phone, I got in touch with Wanda. And I have to say that for me, there was just something immediately that I could tell that she had great recovery, a lot of kindness, and a lot of hope. And that's really what I wanted to give everyone at this convention. So I want to thank her so much for coming from Texas to be with us. Yes, I love her accent. And it just, I mean, her personality, I don't know. I just hope you've had a few moments during the weekend to talk to her, because she's a great, great lady. And she told us her story last night, and tonight she's going to talk about the promises. So please join me in welcoming Wanda S. Thank you. Oh my gosh, she's...
Wow, I don't know if I can live up to that introduction or not. Woo. Thank you, Eileen. This is in my way. So. All right. Wow. You know, I'm having fun. Are y'all?
Yeah.
This is great. This is wonderful. And I just love good times. You know, the big book says that we're not a glum lot. And before I got here, I was kind of a glum lot, but not anymore. But I think we need to say the serenity prayer again, because I'm kind of like out there right now. So let's take a breath and ask God into this part of our meeting. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. All right. I did talk about my history last night a little bit. I didn't tell you much about my family. I wanted to just tell you a little bit about my family tonight, because you know, I love them, and I love how they have supported me. And so I want to mention that my husband and I were married 53 years. Now, you know, I credit program with about half of that anyway. So, and I am forever grateful that the last 30 years of that anyway, I was in recovery enough that we got along better, because I wasn't so bossy. And so anyway, something happened that just helped us to be happy. And I believe it was program. And it's my theory that if just one person in the family is working a program, it affects the whole family, because it did mine. It did mine. I have three, I would call them children, but they're adult children now. And I have two sons and a daughter. And I have six grandchildren and four great-grandchildren. So, yeah, I have a wonderful family, and I'm proud of it. And, you know, I'm proud that they love me, and we all get along, and we're happy to be together. And I just believe that's a gift from the program. I really do. So, and I also wanted to tell you that last night I talked about our friend from Denver. His initials are MK. So I called him and left a message on his phone last night when I got to my room. Anyway, this morning when I got back from meditation, there was a message on my phone from him, and he said that he had been to his oldest brother's funeral, and that's why he was not here. He said it's his brother that had cerebral palsy, And so Mike was in Kansas and had just gotten home on Wednesday. So I thought we should, you know, keep him in our prayers, keep Mike in our prayers, because I would guess that Mike probably did the service. I don't know. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that to let everybody know about that. So he's the one that, you know, will tell you that he pushed me into service, but you'll have to ask him how he did that. So anyway, we're going to talk about the promises tonight and how they have come true in my life, and I want you to think about how they have come true in your life as well while I'm talking about it, because our experiences are different, but the truth it always is the same. So the truth is that if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. You know, that's one of the first promises that we talk about as promises, although the big book is full of promises, hundreds of promises, really. But that is the first one that we talk about and read and really get into. But, you know, things that have happened to me in program have been nothing short of amazing. In fact, I've learned how to say that word a lot, you know, like I'm amazed at something. But for a while I was saying, I can't believe that. But, you know, I can believe it, too. I can believe it, because talks about these will always come true if we work for them. So any time we're working a program, something's going to happen. Something's going to change in our life. And so I just wanted to kind of go through the promises and talk about just a couple of things that that have come true in my life. And talking about that we'll be amazed before we are halfway through, I am a person that I like kind of synchronicities and things that just happen that I didn't have to beat into place and make happen. And some things just seem like they just fall out of the sky and, you know, and bless me. And I think that's one of these. And I was told by a mentor years ago about surprises, because I used to didn't like surprises. And, you know, this says we will be amazed before we're halfway through. But I used to thought a surprise was something that I wasn't expecting and maybe wouldn't like. But anyway, she said, well, why don't you ask God for happy surprises every morning in your meditation? So I started asking God for a happy surprise every day. And, you know, I get them. But the thing is, I have to notice them and realize, oh, that's it. That's it. So I had, you know, I had some surprises yesterday. And I had another one after I shared. Someone came up and gave me a hug. And it was the other Wanda that's here. And I met her in Alaska, of all things, and had no idea that she would be here. But anyway, that was another happy surprise that I had yesterday. And today, you know, I've just been in the workshops, and they've been so enlightening and so powerful for me. And then after the workshops were over, my friend Andrea, that I have served on the regional board with for years and just have loved her and watched her, you know, grow and work and just become such a leader, she invited me to, I didn't want to walk in the Garden of the Gods, but she invited me just to go for a tour, and she drove me around. So how about that? And the weather was lovely. It was totally beautiful this afternoon. And now I understand it's raining and hailing outside. So, so you know, that was a happy surprise. And I like things like that. And it says we're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness, and that's that second promise that we have. And I believe that I have had that, because my life is far happier than it used to be. I used to cry a lot. I used to get my feelings hurt. I used to think nobody liked me. I had to quit thinking that after a while, because I found out that thinking it made me feel bad, you know. So those kinds of things we realize after a while that we don't want to continue on with some of our old behaviors. But I was just thinking about, you know, we get these promises. The big book has them right after we do our eighth and ninth steps. So a lot of the things that are on this list for me really began to happen along that time, because I'll tell you, it was hard to get up that far in program in my life, because it took me 2 years to get some abstinence. And I was working steps 1, 2, and 3 pretty good, and I think I did a fourth step when I wasn't abstinent. But when I got abstinent and started redoing my steps, that's when things really started opening up for me and started happening. So I was thinking, there are some of these steps that I can't do. And that was 8 and 9 were about where I was thinking I needed to stop because it was getting too hard. It was getting too hard. So but anyway, by that time I had a sponsor that I trusted totally. I totally trusted that she would guide me and help me. And she told me that God would help me do my 8th and 9th steps, and I was not going to be alone in doing them. And I have found that to be so true. And little miracles, those amazing things happened to me in that step. And I mentioned last night that two people on my list were sitting at my kitchen table when I got home. And one of them was my daughter, who had moved away to college. It was just 20 miles away, but nevertheless, she was in the dorm. And I wasn't expecting her to be there. But anyway, I had talked with my sponsor about her, because so much of what she was doing, I felt like I wanted her to tell me every detail. And my sponsor, you know, noticed that it was like I was trying to live my life through her. So she told me I needed to kind of cut the apron strings and distance myself a little bit and stop calling her every day to see what she was wearing, you know, that kind of thing. And you know, I was able to tell her that night in a way that was loving, and it wasn't like I was, you know, cutting her out of my life. But I told her that I needed, I think my sponsor said, Wanda, you need to live your life and let her live her life. And she said that was the best gift that I could give her or anybody else, is let them be who they are and live their own life. So, you know, we talked about that a little bit. And like I say, she was in college, and I wanted to know everything. I wanted to know what she was doing and who she was with. I just wanted to get the feel of it, because that was one of the things that I had missed in my growing up years. And so I wanted to get the feel of it, and but I had to quit, you know, calling her every day. So anyway, when we were working the 7th step, and or when we were doing it at that time, we were asked to stand up as a sponsor. And you know, now, you know, we just say your sponsor can just be ahead of you in program. But at that time, we said, when you're on step 7, you got to start standing up. So I had completed that and was starting to work on 8 and 9. And so I stood up as a sponsor for that first night. And guess who the first person was to ask me to sponsor them? Well, it was a college girl who wanted to call me every night and tell me about her life. So I don't know how that worked. but that's exactly what happened. And it was, you know, that was my first realization. Hey, God is in this deal with me. He is. Because I, you know, I couldn't have made that happen. And, I mean, I love things that I didn't have to make happen. Just I had felt that in my life, that, you know, some of the things that that I wanted, I just had to just beat them into place and you know, get it done and be the one, you know, doing it. But through the help of a sponsor in the program, I learned to let go and let God. And that's what my little affirmation said tonight when I unwrapped that little bitty thing. It said, let go and let God. So, you know, I had to learn how to do that and stop thinking that I had to do everything that I wanted done. And I began to just kind of go with the flow. And I mean, begin slowly. I don't mean I got into it and it all happened quickly. But anyway, I've had some happy surprises, and I've had some of that synchronicities. And then we read, we will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. And that was the one that I, whenever that were first read to me, that was the one that I said, man, would I ever like that? Because I had really kind of closed off a part of my life, because I didn't feel like I was a part of the group that I was with. I didn't have anything to talk about with them, because I had not had so many of the experiences that the people that I was with had had. And so I just listened, or, you know, talked about the weather, or talked about my kids, or sometimes talked about my husband, which, you know, quit doing that in program too, as far as complaining. But but anyway, I just felt I didn't measure up. I was trying to be something I wasn't, because I wanted to be like them, do the things they did, but I didn't have any experience with it. So when I got into working my fourth and fifth step, and my sponsor, you know, really gave me some good feedback about that, and how I should be grateful for some of the things that I hadn't been grateful for, that some of those things were very valuable in my life. Anyway, and another one of those things was my educational background. I did not have that was a big piece that I felt like was missing, because this was my childhood was back in the 50s, and my father got the idea that we would be better off if we didn't go to public school and were tutored at home. But I'll tell you, that nobody was doing that back in those days. Of course, now it's a great thing, but back in those days, that was not the norm. Nobody was doing it. So, I did go to business college later, and so I got some typing and shorthand skills and things like that, and went into the business world, and I worked for lawyers for 20 years. And I felt pretty good about that, except I knew that I didn't have what so many of them had, that education. So after program, I'm getting into program, getting recovery, I decided to go back to school and go to college. And I had to go into my boss's office and tell him, here I am, 50 years old, tell him that I needed a day off to go get my GED so I could go to college, and things like that. I had stopped regretting my past. I had truly began to look at that as a gift that I'd been given to have, some homeschool, because I know that it gave me a certain knowledge and certain experiences that others didn't have. So the program helped me to realize that my own experiences were what I had to offer the world, and not somebody else's experiences. And so I did. I enrolled in the night school, and went on, and finally I quit my job at the law office, and I went to work in a treatment center that treats all addictions, and eating disorders was the main one. So, I was very fortunate to have that available for me in Abilene, Texas. So that was just another thing that I can say, I don't regret the past, and I don't wish to shut the door on it. I mean, that's amazing to me that I can talk like that, because I have heard people say after their parents passed away that they knew very little about them, and they regretted that they knew so little about their parents' lives as young people. And today, I'm not regretting the past, and that just feels so good. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. And of course, in OA, sometimes no matter how far up the scale we have gone, we can see how our experience benefits others. But when I think about going down the scale, I just think about going down the drain or something. No matter how low and how bad we feel about ourselves, eventually we can find a way that our experience can can benefit others and does benefit others. And I just want to tell y'all that, you know, coming here and being able to get up and talk is a blessing to me, and I hope it is to you, but it is a huge blessing to me just to be able to get up and, you know, share and open up a little bit more, because every time I share, I open up a little bit more. So I feel like I should be thanking Eileen rather than y'all thanking me, because truly, every time, and you'll find this true, every time you talk, you're going to open up a little bit more about your life. You're going to find insights that you didn't know you had. And sometimes I talk about stuff that I hadn't thought about in years. And things like this give me the opportunity to do that. So when you talk, notice, you know, what you learn from your own self. And what I heard one time, if you're in a meeting and nobody has said anything that speaks to you, that you should open your mouth and say it yourself. So open your mouth and say what you need to say. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. And that's another thing that has been so big for me in program, is that serenity. I used to be so afraid of authority, afraid of the IRS, you know, I mean, just whatever was out there I'd read something in the paper that happened to somebody else, and I'd be afraid it was going to happen to me, you know. And I used to know a friend that was afraid to let her kids outside because she was afraid a UFO was going to come down and get them. Because back in those days, there was a lot of talk about UFOs. Now, we don't hear about that today, but back in those days, there was. But I think about that we don't have to be afraid of what, just because it happens to somebody else doesn't mean it's going to happen to me. And I don't have to worry every time I read the paper about, you know, something happening that, you know, car wreck or something. It doesn't have to happen to me. I have serenity about it. And I used to wake up a lot in the middle of the night worrying about stuff. And, you know, when your mind goes to sleep and then it wakes up with all your worries of the day or the year, I'd get up and I'd go in the bathroom and start worrying, you know. I don't know what good I thought that would do, but I don't do that anymore. If I wake up in the middle of the night, I've got to go to the bathroom, but I go back to bed as soon as I get through. So anyway, that's another way that the promise has just come true for me. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. And the only way I can say that feeling of uselessness and self-pity has disappeared is in service and in working with others and doing what needed to be done. And we talked today at one of the workshops about service. And, you know, everybody in there had something that they started doing at a meeting almost as soon as they got to OA, putting up chairs, carrying the literature, and that was one thing I did at that time. We didn't leave the literature at the church building where we were meeting, so I would put it in the back of somebody's car and I would carry it. And there was a time or two that I was intending to take that literature back and tell everybody that I wasn't coming back, because I mean it was like that literature got me back even when I thought it was going to be, you know, my last meeting, because I was at that time when I was first really getting into the program. I mean, I was like crying about a lot of stuff that I, you know, I didn't know why I was crying. But I remember one time that I was on my way to my daughter's basketball game, and it was out of town, and I was driving. I was 30 or 40 miles away, and I just started bawling, just crying, and I mean it just came over me. But I know that I was getting into my stuff, and you know, I just turned around and went back home. I just could not go on. But I got back home, and you know, after that I talked to somebody and found out I needed to call other OA people when things like that happened to me. So let's see, that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. And I'm thinking about sponsorship specifically, because when I began to sponsor after I had worked Step 7 and started just trying to, you know, help somebody else to see how the program could help them, it got me out of myself. And that's what I like to tell people. If we're into ourselves, if we're into our own stuff, feeling sorry for ourselves, and, you know, just because I've been in program a long time doesn't mean I'm completely over that. But sometimes, you know, that little feeling will hit me. But if I'll just get out of myself and make some phone calls or, you know, just talk to another OA person, and that can get me out of it. So when I talk about sponsorship, I just, you know, I look out at the group, and I just hope everybody here has a sponsor. And I've talked to people that said they got one here, but I was just wondering if it would be appropriate if the available sponsors would stand up so people here who don't have a sponsor could see who they need to talk to. Would that be all right? If you're available as a sponsor, would you stand up and everybody look around and see who's standing up? There are so many people here who are willing to help the newcomer. Would you just go around and give your names? Just tell your name so that they can contact or. Yeah, start with.
I'm Gina. I'm in Arvada, Colorado. I'm available.
I'm Jim. I'm in Arvada, and I'm married to her.
Okay. Okay.
And
let's give our sponsors a hand. Thank you so much. I think that is one of the biggest blessings of the program, is having a sponsor that is a little bit ahead of us in program and can give us some really objective feedback. So if you don't have a sponsor right now, I hope you looked around, and before everybody goes home, please ask someone to sponsor you if you don't have a sponsor. I just believe that people that try to work the program by themselves are just missing so much. They're just missing a huge part of the program. Let's go on and look at this promise number 7 is losing interest in selfish things and gaining interest in our fellows. And again, that to me, that's about service. It's about getting involved and doing something for somebody else or for the group. And, you know, there's so many things we can do for the group. We can do for our local group, but we can also do for our inner group. And I've heard a lot of people talk about when you go to a meeting and you don't have any idea what inner group is, well, that's okay. You'll learn. You can learn it. And it's not something that is so hard to do, except maybe treasurer or something. But anyway, volunteer to be the inner group rep, or just go and listen, because anytime we can do service, we're getting out of ourselves. Self-seeking will slip away. I love that one as well, and I think it all goes into the kind of the same basket in a way. I don't know how it happens, but it just happens that finally we realize that we're not. It's not just all what I want. It's what the group wants, and we learn that. I learned a lot in the group consciences that we have. We have ours on the first day of the month of the meeting, that whatever meeting we're in. If it's a Monday meeting, we have it on the first Monday of the month. But it's called group conscience, and I learned that. What we do there is really listen to what other people want and then take a vote. And it's not always what I want. Sometimes it wasn't. And that's one thing that program has taught me. You know, I don't have to have my way to be happy. I just need to be happy. And accept what the group wants. And so that carries on not only in our OA group, but it carries on in our homes, in any organizations that we might be in, or if we're teachers or any place we work, it carries on that we don't have to just have our way with everything in order to be happy. We can be happy. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. That is ongoing for me, my whole attitude and outlook upon life, because as I grow in program, I start to think different. And even some of the things I thought that I knew back when I came in, I don't always think the same way anymore. Things change, and I get some new attitudes and outlooks. And I've started to see or try to see the positive instead of the negative first. And I was, for many years, I was a person that somebody brought up something to do. I mean, and this was even in OA or at work with groups. If somebody brought up something that we had never done, or maybe we had done it years ago and it didn't work, well, I was the one to say, well, we've already tried that, you know, and it didn't work, or that won't work, or whatever. I was kind of the, like, I just was thinking along the line of what we couldn't do rather than what we could do. Well, program and program people have really had an influence on me, and a lot of the things that we read in our meditation books, for one thing, have had an influence on changing my thinking. And so I start to look now at the positive side pretty soon. Maybe not the first thing I think of, but I start to look at the positive side. And I was just thinking about, you know, I told you last night about the big tree that had to be cut down that was laying on my house. And that tree was just like part of the family, because we've lived in that house about 45 years, and that tree has always been there, right out my front door. And it was just like, every time I looked at it, you know, there's our tree. There's the biggest tree we have. But anyway, whenever they built that house, 60 years ago, we think, they had no idea that tree would get as big as it did and start, you know, laying on the roof. But anyway, it had to be cut down, and so I was out there watching that process, and I was talking to my son, and I was realizing that I was about to cry about that tree going. And all of a sudden, I had to start looking at it in a different way besides, there's my favorite tree, and, you know, I don't have that shade on that part of the house anymore. It's because that's kind of what I was thinking. It was just like, what am I going to do? Every time I look there, it's going to be empty. And I just realized I've got to start thinking about this differently. And there was already someone that had told us they wanted that wood from that tree. It was an oak tree. And I began to think about the new uses that tree could now give itself to. Firewood, you know, to warm people's home in the winter. I think the man was going to take it to a furniture place that made furniture out of wood. And no telling what all he was going to do with it. But I started trying to think of the way that tree could bless other people besides me and my family. And immediately I started feeling better about that tree. I started feeling better myself inside, and I started realizing only thing that changed was up here in my head. You know, nothing changed. I mean, they kept on sawing. Nothing changed. But my attitude about it, my whole attitude and outlook upon that incident changed in a few minutes. And because of that, my mood changed. And then I didn't go around telling everybody how much I was going to miss that tree. And truly, when I go out there now, it's all pretty much sawdust right now where that was. But, you know, I don't feel bad about that. And I'm amazed, really. I'm really amazed that somebody said, well, we just need to get you a bush and plant there. And so, yeah, we do. So we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. And remembering my growing up years and when I was first raising my children, having situations that baffled me and I wouldn't know what to do, and I talked to my husband, and then I talked to my sisters, and then I talked to somebody that I had no more idea what to do than I did, but I would talk to whoever would listen about the dilemma. And it used to baffle me, but I was taught, again, not to do that, that I don't need to get everybody's opinion about what I need to do anymore. And, you know, when I get ready to do something, I don't have to ask anybody now. I mean, you know, I just go do it pretty much. And I did have a wonderful opportunity to go to New York this past summer. And I've never been to New York, but this person that I met actually on an OA telephone meeting that lives in New York had come to visit me. And so she invited me to New York. And anyway, we had dinner when some of my kids were there, and she was telling them, your mama needs to come see me in New York. And I was thinking, that's not going to happen. I'm not going to New York. And my kids started saying, you need to go, Mama. You need to go. So they were all telling me I needed to go. And, you know, it's like if I was maybe in not so intuitive in myself, but I had a lot of support in doing something that was good for me, because I did end up going to New York. And we had a wonderful time, went to a lot of different things, some of the things that she wanted to show me and some of the things that I wanted to do. And I told her I wanted to go to an OA meeting while I was there. So some of y'all have been to meetings in New York. Well, I went to one, and we ended up in a coffee shop. So it was Memorial Day, actually. So we went to, she drove over there or something anyway, which found out that most people don't drive in New York. But anyway, she took me around to several places. But anyway, we went to that meeting, and it was Memorial Day, and the door was locked at that building. So we stood there a minute, and two more people walked up, and they looked like they might be one of us. So we said, are y'all going to the OA meeting, because we can't get in the door? And they were kind of like fairly newcomers, and they said, yeah. And so my friend said, well, would y'all like to go to a meeting and just go somewhere and have a cup of coffee or something and have an OA meeting? And they said, yeah. So anyway, we went in a coffee shop, and it was full except for one table at the front with four chairs. So it looked like that was saved for us. So we sat down there, and we had an OA meeting in that coffee shop. And it was wonderful. It was just wonderful. It wasn't what I was expecting of a New York OA meeting, but it was the one that was meant for me. And we got to share our experience, strength, and hope with those people that had only been coming for like a month or two to OA, and exchange phone numbers and everything. And it was really wonderful. It really was. And another thing that I enjoyed doing, I'm a baseball fan, and there's a new Yankee Stadium in New York, fairly new, and they're proud of it. But my friend is not a baseball fan, and she had never been to that stadium. But guess who the Yankees were playing that night? The Texas Rangers. So I said, you know, I want to go to that. She said, well, I've never been to that stadium. We'll go. And so she took me, and I had been having trouble with my knee, so I was kind of limping a little bit. And so she went past the line up to the front, and she said, we're two old ladies with with knee problems. What can y'all do for us? And so he moved us like to the front of the line, and we got in, and she told the ticket agent that. And he put us up there with, I guess it was a handicap place, but it was some of the best seats in the house, I'll guarantee you. So if you want to go to New York, I'll give you my friend's numbers. But that's just one of the things that the promises keep coming true for me when I don't have to make them happen. They just keep happening to me, and I just love that. And, you know, the last one is, we'll suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And, you know, I learned that early on, that I could not fix my eating disorder. I could not. I had tried. I mean, I had tried for 40 years. I started eating inappropriately, you know, by myself. I wanted to go outside and eat, and that I just kept doing that. I wanted to eat alone, and I don't know why that was, but I wanted to eat what I wanted to eat with nobody watching. And that, you know, it's fine for an 8-year-old, but it's not so good for a 40-year-old. So, because I'd have to get in the car sometime and go and get my stuff, or sometimes I would leave my stuff in the car so I could just go get it and eat it. I have snuck around and hid food, and I mean, just y'all know what I'm talking about. But anyway, I had truly tried to stop doing that for many years, really ever since I was a teenager when I first started the yo-yo dieting. I started like eating only fruit for a couple of days, and then, you know, back to my old ways, and then, or just, you know, just stuff that teenagers do. And then I would go and get help from somebody that truly was trying to help me, but I wouldn't tell them what I was truly doing. I wasn't honest with the doctors that were trying to help me, and I was asking for diet pills, and I didn't tell them that I ate the whole sack of something. I would tell them I had a, you know, little bit of something. And so, you know, it was my own stuff that I just wasn't honest with people trying to help me. But I knew that I was trying. I was trying. And by the time I got to OA, I truly knew that I couldn't fix it. And I had tried to say, well, this is just the way it is. This is the way I am. I'm just going to be this way. And so I'm going to give up. Well, I tried to, but I just couldn't say, you know, this is the rest of my life. It's how I'm going to be. I just couldn't do that. So I just kept, you know, I kept looking. And when my sister came one Thanksgiving, she was in another 12-step program. But we were talking about food and issues and how much we wanted to lose weight. And we were sitting there eating Thanksgiving dinner while we were talking about it. And our family, and our family of origin, we not only ate what was on the table at Thanksgiving, but then when some of it was gone, we got up and brought the rest of it from the kitchen and finished eating it and talking. And that's the way we visited years ago when we would get together. And I have three sisters, and I had at that time two brothers. One of them has passed away since then, but I came from a large family. And finally, you know, we realized in recovery that we didn't do that anymore. We don't get up and get more food and keep bringing it to the table anymore. In fact, we don't visit around food anymore. But anyway, we were sitting there talking about it, and anyway, she wanted to take me to an OA meeting. So she got up and went to the telephone and called a number that was in the newspaper about OA. And that's how I got to my first meeting, the Saturday after Thanksgiving in 1983. And we drove up there, and there were about five other women. They hugged us. They welcomed us, and I wasn't used to being hugged by somebody I never had seen before. And I thought, you know, this must be a friendly group, and maybe they can help me. And then when they opened their mouth and started talking about their situation with food and how they handled it or didn't handle it, they told my story, and it was like, you know, maybe I can get honest with these people. Maybe I can finally tell somebody what I'm doing with food. And so I wanted, you know, what they had. And one of them was talking about her experience right before Thanksgiving when somebody came by with a plate of goodies and said, would you like one? And she said, no, but I'll take the whole plate, you know, and I certainly understood that. And I thought, well, you know, these people would probably understand me. And so I kept going back. And at that time, we weren't given the food plan. At that time, that OA had stopped giving out food plans. Now we do have the Dignity of Choice, but anyway, they told me that three meals a day with nothing in between was one way to start abstinence. And for 2 weeks after that meeting, and mind you, this was right after Thanksgiving and the refrigerator still had a lot of stuff in it. But for 2 weeks, I didn't eat between meals. I only ate at my meal. And that was a miracle. I mean, it was like, man, this is the answer. I've got it. This is a way to go. And I mean, I was still eating Thanksgiving food, but I was sitting down at the table at my meal. And that was, I mean, it was just heavenly. But I didn't realize that abstinence was going to, you know, go deeper than just the food, that it was going to start bringing up feelings of what I had been eating over all these years. And I'd been pushing stuff down with food. And when I quit pushing stuff down with food, well, it had to come up, didn't it? So when it did, I binged one night after, you know, on my way home from a meeting. And it took me 2 years to get back to anything that I could call abstinence. But I kept going back, and people just said, keep coming back. And that's when I kept coming back and putting up chairs. And I might, you know, call a newcomer or something. Now, I didn't have anything to offer them except, you know, keep coming back. But I wanted to be a part of that group because I wanted what some of those people had. And I didn't realize it at the time. A lot of them didn't have the abstinence that they wanted, but they had honesty, and that's what I wanted. I wanted that honesty to be able to just admit to myself and to God and to another human being what I was doing with my food, and to get the help I needed. And eventually, you know, if you stay long enough in program, you're going to hear what you need to hear and get what you need to get. So that happened for me, and I'm just grateful that these promises continue to come true in my life. They're not stopping. They're still coming. They're still coming. And the freedom, the happiness, the trust, the way that God has taken care of me this past year in my life, you know, the promises are coming true. And sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. But they are coming true in my life to this day. And, you know, What I'm thinking is, I just want to stick around and see how much better it gets, because I think that it's going to get better. I think that life just continues to evolve, and I like the song about that. We just continue to evolve and program. My thinking continues to change. My life continues to change, and the program still works, and the promises, you know, still come true in our life. And I was thinking about something the other day about saying I love you, and that I had not had somebody to say I love you lately. And anyway, I went to get my nails done at a new place right before I came, because the person that does my nails has been ill. And that young lady, you know, foreign, probably from Vietnam, I'm not sure where she's from, but anyway, we were talking, and she said, I love you. And I thought, why did she say that? I don't know why she said that. But she was, you know, just doing me so kindly, and my feet and my hands. And that just went to my heart. Now, yes, my children say that, but just this kind of stranger that it just came out of her mouth, I guess. Just she just told me that. And I thought, you know, that's the program in my life. God giving me what I need, and I don't have to be worried about who it's coming from or how it's coming, if I can just let it come. So I just want to tell you tonight, if no one has told you that they love you today, I just want to tell you right now, I love you all. Thank you.